shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. We go places other talk shows wish they could, but they...
Yeah!
Can't. Every night, and we're also online at philhendryshow.com. This radio show is entering a history-making phase because we are rapidly approaching the conclusion of a completely archiving the radio shows that we've done from roughly 1998 forward, 98 forward. Archiving, and then we will begin to log these. We have converted them to downloadable shows. And what does all of this mean? Forget about the fact that this is on our website and you guys can take advantage of it and actually go over there and listen to these history-making radio shows, which that's what they are. We are the very first show that we are aware of that will successfully complete the project of archiving thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of an individual radio show's performances. We're doing it. We're going to complete it. It's going to be online, and it will be a first in the history of broadcasting. Now, I know that there's all kinds of shows out there that have archived most of the shows, or they've archived, but we're talking about daily shows, thousands of hours, and we're close to completing that, and close to, there's still work to be done. But let me tell you something. There are larger companies than ours, there are bigger efforts than ours, that have given up on trying to do that for their shows. Given up! Because, quite frankly, if you want my honest opinion, it's because they don't have enough of an interest in the show.
Well, the guy doesn't even own the show himself.
That's right. That's exactly right. The companies that own these shows don't care. The guys that host them don't own their own material, so they can't do anything about it. We do. And so that's what we're going to do. And I say all of that to say this. Go over to our website, philhendryshow.com. And get a backstage pass. It'll be well worth it as you listen to these archives, as you watch our video casts, as you access our news logs, watch our webisodes, watch our video rants, get a hold of the podcast that is daily available through iTunes. You'll see that it's well worth it. All right, anyway, welcome back to the show. This is our News and Information Hour. You just heard Bud Dickman. Robert, I heard you on the air last hour. Oh, no, the hour before?
Yeah, I was at home with my aunt.
And I heard she was talking to who?
She was talking to Pastor Rennick. I mean, that guy... I don't think that man is wrapped too tight.
Did you tell him, though, did you play college football?
I played, freshman year college football.
6'6" and what?
When I played, I was 6'6", 330.
How much do you weigh now?
400.
All right. 400. Okay. Mel Gibson's work on a Jewish film, frankly, preposterous, Rabbi says. I don't know how you feel about this, but... Mel Gibson was the guy, you know, he's the movie director that, among other things in his life, he's done a great many things. He has,
Called somebody a Jew.
Wait a minute, will you, before we get to that? I'm talking about his accomplishments.
Ain't that an accomplishment? Yeah, he did it to a cop, didn't get his head caved in.
Yeah, he did it to a cop and didn't get his head caved in. You know, you're right. That is an accomplishment. Among his many accomplishments, he's a film director. He's a movie actor. He's done a great many things in the field of making movies. On top of that, as has been well chronicled, he was pulled over by the California Highway Patrol or L.A. County Sheriff, I forget who, one fine night and launched into an anti-Semitic rant with this cop. Are you a Jew? Are you this? Are you that? Now, you will forgive people if they are highly suspicious of this most latest move. And what is this most latest move? Mel Gibson will not have an acting role in a movie about Jewish historical icon Judah Maccabee, although he may direct the film. He may direct a movie about the one of the honored figures in Jewish history, Judah Maccabee. He was a war hero. He was a war hero in the year of 165 B.C. among the Jewish people. He was a Judean priest. He commanded the Judean resistance to Greek forces. Hanukkah, a part of Hanukkah, honors Judah Maccabee. So He obviously an incredibly significant figure. And Mel Gibson, a guy that was going on and on about Jews with this cop, and then with that woman he was going to marry, the N-word this and the N-word that. I mean, are they kidding? So you would be forgiven if you look askance at this, as I do.
But what do you think? It's like some kind of publicity?
I think it's a... it's a career-saving move, you know.
Yeah, they're going to have him make a movie about a Jew guy, and then people with the Jews will think it's okay.
You're not supposed to say Jew guy.
Yeah, don't say that, bud, okay?
I'm sorry.
Say a Jewish guy. You understand?
Yeah.
So, I think you guys are on the same page as I am. Now, the possibility of Gibson's involvement in the Warner Brothers Studios production brought harsh reaction from some Jewish leaders in the United States, including Rabbi Marvin Heyer of the Simon Wiesenthal Center here in Los Angeles. He said, and I quote, "I think it's quite frankly preposterous." He was talking to CNN. "Judah Maccabee is one of the greatest heroes in Jewish history. Mel Gibson is an anti-Semite. He has made anti-Semitic remarks in the past. I don't know what Warner Brothers is thinking." Warner Brothers is trying to save an investment. Warner Brothers, to the extent that they have capital invested in Mr. Gibson, that they've got him signed to some kind of a contract, that's what I'm assuming, you know.
Well, I mean, why would they do it otherwise, you know?
I don't know. I don't know why any studio would say, oh, wow, I got a great idea. Let's do a movie about Judah Maccabee, and let's hire Mel Gibson to direct it, even though we've not had a business relationship with him up to this point recently. Let's go ahead. I don't get that. So Warner Brothers must be a company that he is contractually beholden to, or they to him, and they need to recoup that investment somehow.
Yeah, they're going to get it. People are going to laugh at him.
I don't know if they're going to laugh at him, but, you know, at Warner Brothers, again, forgive me if I don't have my facts straight, but if you do have an interest financially, contractually in Mel Gibson, come on, man. I mean, you guys, it ain't going to work. I think it's one of those moves, you know, that people say, oh, yeah, you know, I think it's one of those situations where sometimes you underestimate, as, you know, H.L. Mencken is famous to have said, you know who H.L. Mencken is?
What?
Do you know who H.L. Mencken is?
Who?
Do you know who H.L. Mencken is?
Who's H.L. Mencken?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about, do you know who H.L. Mencken is?
I don't know who he is.
Thank you.
Well, that's why I couldn't answer.
Well, if you don't know who he is, just say you don't know who he is.
No, all you got to do is say you don't know who he is.
I don't know who he is. That's why I couldn't say.
Wait a minute, bud. What was my question?
It's something about H.L. Mencken. I said, well, who's he?
Exactly. You don't know who he is. That's what I was asking.
Yeah.
No, just don't talk anymore. Don't talk anymore. You don't know who he is. Is that right?
Who?
Oh, I'm going to belt you.
Hold on, man. You don't know H.L. Mencken, man. Just say it.
I don't know H. Mencken.
H. Mencken. H.L. Never mind.
Your health, man. Your health.
Yeah, my health. H.L. Mencken was a writer in Baltimore, a newspaper writer who famously said, "No one ever went broke underestimating the taste of the American people." H.L. Mencken was a very famous, by the way, also an anti-Semitic guy. Although, you know, H.L. Mencken was just an angry guy. And during a period of American and world history when it wasn't such a terrible thing for one's career to be an anti-Semite, there were times when H.L. Mencken uttered certain anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish phrases or wrote that way. However, at the same time, he was outspoken against Hitler and the way he was treating Jews. So, you know, H.L. Mencken was just a contrarian, just a guy that wanted to piss people off. But he did say, "Nobody ever went broke underestimating the taste of the American people." Basically, what he was saying is the American people's taste is up there you know what. That when it comes to popular taste, we ain't got any. And you can't go low enough in this country as an impresario, anybody who is putting a movie together, anybody that's making a play, anybody that is selling a book, anybody that's selling magazines, there is no bottom for you to hit. You can go right down to the sewer, and you'll make money in America.
Wow.
He said that?
That's what he meant. That's what H.L. Mencken meant. H.L. Mencken was saying, basically, there's no sewer foul enough that you can't make a buck in America. All right. I mean, but again, he was a very cynical guy. Now, keeping in mind that opinion of H.L. Mencken's, I think he's wrong.
You go against H.L. Mencken.
You don't even know who he is. What do you care?
Yeah, man. I don't know. He sounds important.
Yeah, well, the fact is that I think the American people are not going to necessarily buy this one, man. First of all, the audience for a historical piece like this would have to be, I think, fairly specific. I don't know. I would go see it, but then I'm a history freak. Passions of the Christ was a different story entirely. Passions of the Christ is about one of the most famous figures in world history. Judah Maccabee is one of the most famous figures in Jewish history. While that's big, it ain't as big as Jesus. You know?
Yeah, Jesus, man, that you can't underestimate the taste of American people on that.
Whatever that means, man.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know. I mean, you know.
No, I don't know. Anyway, just never mind. So, So, first of all, I think it's going to be a tough draw. Now, you got Mel Gibson as a director on a good day. If it was before any of this anti-Semitic stuff, if it was a day when Mel Gibson was still the fair-haired boy of Braveheart and all that other crap that he did, then I think you'd have a, I think people would go see the movie because, hey, it's Mel Gibson. He just did Braveheart. He did Mad Max. He's it, man. He's all the rage. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's go see this movie. I bet you it's really cool. Do you know anything about Judah Maccabee? No, but I didn't know anything about this guy in Braveheart either. You know? And that would be a reasonable thing. Okay, wow. You know, look at, this is a guy that made William Wallace of Scotland, whoever the hell he is, famous. I bet you he could do the same thing for Judah Maccabee. Well, no, he can't, not since this anti-Semitic stuff and all the others. No, people are going to stay away from this guy like he's poison.
You lisp. You went, I bet that he can't.
Okay, I lisp. So what?
Sounds kind of gay.
Thank you. I'll take it under advisement. Are you guys serious? I mean, why don't you just keep it quiet, man, when you got nothing important to say?
But yeah, but you went, I think he's just going to say guy.
Ooh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. All like, excuse me.
Yeah, excuse me, sir. Can I have...
Get out of here, will you? All right, we'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. A New Mexico woman is billed $1,222 for a cavity search of her that turned up no heroin. But they looked in every hole and every orifice, and, gee, we didn't find anything. That was interesting. And she's suing. We'll be back here in the world... she's not suing, but she's being charged for the search. We'll be back here in the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. With me, Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here in our News and Information Hour. Those are the shoes and the boots and the steel-toed romper stompers worn by the great many people who listen and enjoy our show. Check out our website and find out what's new, man, and there's a lot new. Go over there to philhenryshow.com. A New Mexico woman was billed $1,222 for a cavity search of her that turned up no heroin.
They looking for heroin?
I guess so.
Yeah, well, what did they look for, man?
I don't know.
Hey, Bud, what a dumb question. What an asinine question. I can't get three words out of my mouth.
Well,
I can't get three words out of my mouth before you ask a stupid question.
Well, just asking.
I know what you were asking. The headline, no heroin, were they looking for heroin? What do you think, man? How many times you've been sitting in on the news? Oh, man.
Take it easy, man.
Don't tell me to take it easy. This jackass. Bud, just wait till I finish the story.
Just wondering if they're looking for it.
No, they weren't looking for heroin. They were just wanting to search this woman's cavities. Okay? You happy now? Yeah, you happy, you freak? When police ordered a New Mexico woman's cavity search, no heroin was found, but the woman did get a steep $1,122 for the search. The woman, who remains unnamed, has filed suit against the county asking them to cover the cost of the cavity search. The body cavity search was ordered after police were tipped off by a reliable source that the woman had heroin. On July 1st, a search warrant was issued. The woman was taken to Memorial Medical Center where she was searched for drugs. The search revealed no illegal substances. The woman wasn't arrested or charged with any crime and was released. This is according to MSNBC.
Yeah, well, they're a bunch of liberals.
No, don't give me that horse. Yes, they are. But look, this is a factual report by the news-gathering arm of MSNBC. This is, you know, Rachel Maddow didn't do this. This is NBC. So they said, according to them, the woman wasn't arrested or charged with any crimes and was released. And to add insult to injury, the woman was sent a bill for $1,122 by Memorial Medical Center to cover the cost of the cavity search. In most cases, for police to search a person or a person's property, they need to obtain a search warrant. Search warrants are typically only issued after police make a showing to a judge that there is probable cause that a crime has occurred and that there is a likelihood that evidence of a crime or contraband will be found through the search. Meaning.
What's it mean?
Meaning. When you go to a judge, Your Honor, we would like a search warrant. Oh, really? How come? Your Honor, here are our reasons. And you present to the judge the likelihood or your suspicions and the evidence of those suspicions, at least, that there is a crime being committed, that you are going to find what you're looking for. So the reason why they put that in the story is why? The reason why they put that in the story is to somehow justify or to give you the police's justification for charging that woman for the search. We know you had something. You didn't have something. But you see, it's punitive.
What does that mean, punitive?
Yeah. Something smell bad?
No, something doesn't smell bad. What does that mean?
We go with punitive.
No. It means that they're punishing her. They're still getting in some kind of a punishment, even though they said, okay, Your Honor, we have... Okay, that's great. Here's your search warrant. Thank you. We're going to go. Bang. We search her. Uh-oh. No evidence of a crime. Oh, really? Looks like you screwed up. Yes, but Your Honor, don't you realize you know as well as we do because we showed you we had evidence. Well, yeah, I know, but... All right. So no crime was found to have been committed. No evidence of anything. Well, we're going to charge her anyway for the search. Well, that becomes a punishment of sorts. That becomes a fine. It is a punitive measure, and it's not constitutional. Most likely, I don't know.
Well, which is it? Is it constitutional or not? We got to know. Otherwise, people are going to think you're making all this stuff up.
Yeah, what do you think?
Look, guys, I'm not a freaking lawyer here. You give me this story, I'm just I'm thinking out loud. When making this showing, police can rely on their own observations and evidence or on information given by informants or the sources. If police solely rely on sources or informants, they need to prove that their sources are reliable. The New Mexico woman's cavity search was most likely legal if the source really was reliable. But does that really mean she needs to be slapped with the $1,122 bill? And MSNBC does not answer that question. They kind of leave it dangling, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, they get it all dangling out.
Yeah, how come they leave it all hanging out like that?
They're not leaving anything hanging out, man. They're asking a sort of an open-ended question. And I believe that we, at least in our fantastic, you know, with our brain power, we've answered it. I've said, just moments ago, I said, well, look, to me, it sounds like it's illegal. The search is legal, and I'm not saying the search isn't legal, but slapping her, charging her with the search sounds illegal because it sounds like it's a punishment. Why do you have to pay for something? Why do you have to pay for a police process other than the taxes that you pay in? And it is assumed that all Americans a good portion of us pay taxes to support the police. Some of us don't. Some of us are too young. Some of us are not paying taxes for whatever reason. Maybe we are criminals. Maybe we are skirting the law one way or another in terms of our legal status in the United States. Blah, 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 blah. But the police are being paid for by way of our taxes. So to charge someone extra, especially when they have not been found to be, you know, committing a crime sounds weird.
Yeah.
Well, don't give me the yeah. You're asking. I'm telling you. So we'll find out, I'm sure, at some point in the future. Another story here on Obama's uncle freed after custody after a drunk driving arrest. An uncle of President Barack Obama, who was arrested last month for allegedly operating a vehicle under the influence of alcohol, has been released from custody. Onyango Obama was freed from U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody on Thursday. And by the way, before you start thinking about Obama with all these creepy relatives, Jimmy Carter's family was pretty freaking weird, too. Starting with Billy, and then that Ruth Ann, or who was the one?
Yeah, that preacher lady.
He had that preacher lady. We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Radio for Patriots by Patriots.
It's the worst thing I ever did see.
Take it easy, will you, bud? Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. If you're watching us on Phil TV and HD on our website, we have up a website that I pulled up called Baseball Reference. And actually, it is a uniform database. Now, why have we done this? Because we had a discussion here off-air with Dan and with Bud and with Robert about, actually, I was looking at a highlight.
Yeah, you were looking at the Giants.
We were looking at a Giants-Dodgers highlight, and the Giants had on these orange shirts. And I'm like, what a, the, you know, I personally am not a big fan of the orange and of this and of that. But I do know that orange and black are the Giant colors. And I wondered when that started. So we went back to this uniform database, which is really a good database. It's on a place called Baseball Reference. And they've got all of the Giant uniforms all the way back to 1900 when they were the New York Giants. And we were trying to figure out when they started with the orange and black.
Yeah, it looked like they got black way back.
Yeah, well, they had all black uniforms in the 1915 era. Then they went to, it looks like they introduced a little color.
When they hired Willie Mays.
What do you mean when they hired Willie Mays?
Get out of here. That's what you're saying.
No, I'm talking about like orange. The color orange, okay?
When they introduced color, that's Jackie Robinson.
I don't know who the Giants, no, Jackie Robinson played for the Dodgers. So anyway, the Giant, traditional Giants colors of black and orange, or whatever it is, looks like it originated pretty far back. They went to a blue, and they went from blue to something else, but basically, they kept this black and orange, and of course today that's what it is.
How come they're called the Mets?
That's a different New York team. God. So the New York Giants in 1958 moved to San Francisco. And New York did not have a National League team until the Mets came in. That's why that, okay? I think the Mets actually have a little bit of the old Giant colors. When the Mets came up, they were blue and orange, and that was the New York Giants colors. All right, I don't know why I got sidetracked. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. Back to the show.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting about how that, because the Giants are looking like a bunch of freaks. I think they look like a bunch of real weird, candy-ass freaks. Wearing a uniform like that.
Hey, look at man. You know, who knows? And there's no accounting for taste, as the man said. If they want to wear those orange jerseys, that's theirs. Let me tell you something about baseball. You know, they talk a good game about tradition in baseball. Well, you know, tradition. Look, I saw one time in my life, where the moneyed interests of professional sports actually bowed down to the gods of tradition, where in point of fact, and even still, it was probably a good move to make in terms of money. And that was when the Cleveland Browns moved to Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens. The people of Cleveland were so incensed and so pissed off, and led by their mayor, they petitioned the National Football League. They said, look, you want to move the team, you move the team. They want to call themselves the Ravens, fine. We want our team colors, and we want the team name to stay in Cleveland. Now, Art Modell was the owner of the Cleveland Browns. He, by all rights, owned that name, Cleveland Browns. Even if he wanted to change the name of the team to the Baltimore Ravens, even if you want to change the team colors to purple and black, whatever the hell they are, you know, have at it, have fun. That's where that's at. But in Cleveland, they said, you can take the team and you can stick the team right up you know where if you want to. We don't care, but we want the name Cleveland Browns. We want the team colors, and we want the team records to stay Essentially, what they were asking was the following thing. They wanted a continuation of the Cleveland Brown franchise, and they wanted the Baltimore Ravens to be considered a brand spanking new expansion team.
Yeah, but most expansion teams stink.
Well, in this case, this expansion team would not. The Baltimore Ravens would be a brand new team with brand new records, and right out of the gate, they would be a fully established professional football team with experienced players, and, you know. So what happened was that's what the NFL did. They gave the name Cleveland Brown to the city or to the people of Cleveland or whoever was going to start a team in Cleveland, and they also promised them an expansion franchise. Now, you know, having said what I said about, well, they bowed down to tradition. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they're probably going to make some money on that, too.
Exactly. I don't think they made that move. You know, I hate to be a cynic, but I don't think they made that move not considering the dollars as well. And I think in the long run, they realized maintaining the Cleveland market for professional football was important. And the only way they were going to maintain that market for professional football was by keeping the Cleveland Brown name, keeping the Cleveland Brown records. By the way, speaking of, you know, just exactly what do you believe about people, and this has nothing to do with football. This is more now 9/11. I was watching another terrific show. It was on National Geographic about debunking the 9/11 truth people. And these people who have just been a constantly insulting, more than anything else, they're an insult. 9/11 truth people are an insult because, and this was pointed out on the show tonight, better than anything I've ever seen. 9/11 truth people are an insult because they are not interested in any open discussion of what happened on that day. They claim that they are, but they're not. Because the minute you question their theories, their beliefs, their conclusions, they become openly hostile. There's no possibility, for instance, that a person who believes that Al-Qaeda brought down the World Trade Center and a person that believes George Bush did it, there's no possibility that those two people are going to sit down and have and agree on anything, have a commonly agreed upon theory as to what happened. It isn't going to happen. And the guy that was making these statements said something that was absolutely dead on true. And I said, my God, I've always felt that way about people that believe in UFOs, but I never heard it applied to 9/11 truth. He was absolutely right. He said, because to the 9/11 truth people, it's a religion.
What's that mean?
It means that like all religions, you can't mess with it. It's sacrosanct. You cannot change it. It always will be what it is, and it's religious. It's no longer science. It's no longer journalism. It's no longer anything having to do with scholarship or research. Nothing. It's now religious.
In other words, they're going to say that George Bush did it no matter what the evidence.
Exactly. No matter what the evidence. Now, this one guy that made that terrible movie, Loose Change, I watched that movie. It's an asinine film, and it's one of those movies that, it, you know, gets anybody that's got a real small brain, they think it's just fantastic because it asks so many questions. You can ask a lot of questions about a lot of things as long as you're open to hearing what the answers are. And that's always been the 9/11 truth problem. They ain't open to hearing the answers to anything unless it's an answer being given to them by a fellow 9/11 truth person. And as they exchange emails between themselves, they become more convinced of how righteous they are and how wrong the rest of the world is. But these are only emails, and this is only information they exchange with each other, not with the rest of the world that may, in fact, be a little objective. Who knows?
So what do you mean by the religion?
Well, they're not like worshiping. They're not going to worship at it.
Well, it's not religious in the sense of how we understand religion, but it is religious in the sense that it is immutable. It doesn't change. The precepts of major religions are always going to be what they are. There's never going to be a time when Judaism or Christianity does not believe in God. That just never is going to happen. There's never, ever going to be a time when Christianity doesn't believe that Jesus is the Son of God. It ain't going to happen. So in that sense, religion is not scientific. It is religion, and it is faith-based, as we know. So it's always pretty funny to hear people saying, you can't prove there's a God. Well, it's a ridiculous conversation. You can't prove there's a God. Religion is not in the realm of science. Now, people who are religious who want to push it into the realm of science are making a big, big mistake. Just as people who are scientific and want to apply scientific precepts to religion, they're making a big mistake. The people say, you can't prove there's a God. Prove it. It's a stupid question. But it's also equally a stupid question to say that creationism is a science. It's not.
You're going to get in trouble now. There's got a lot of people write a letter and everything.
I don't care. What do I care?
They're going to call up, say everything about how you're a commie and everything.
Yeah.
I don't give a damn.
They're going to write letters and say you're a commie.
I don't care. How many times I got to say I don't care? I'm not here trying to piss people off. I'm trying to make a bigger point about 9/11 truth. 9/11 truth is religious because there's nothing you're ever, ever, ever going to be able to tell those people. Nothing you will ever be able to tell those people that will make them happy unless it's what they want to believe. And what they'll always want to believe is that it was George Bush, the government, some inside job. That's what they're always going to want to believe. They won't believe anything else, and you are part of the conspiracy yourself. If you say to them that you believe it was Al-Qaeda, you have now become a part of the conspiracy to cover it up. That's how they get around that. If you explain, I explained to one of the biggest meatheads that God has ever allowed to walk past the cradle, one of the dumbest guys I've ever met. I've never really met him. I talked to him and interviewed him on the air. Jesse Ventura. This guy was a governor of a state.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah? This guy actually was elected a governor of a state. You know what that means, don't you?
Well, I mean, you gotta sign bills and stuff.
Oh, yeah. You gotta go sign bills, wear a tie, everything. You're a governor. This guy was a governor. Dumb? Oh, my God. You haven't even seen the likes of it. This guy is so stupid that Jesse Ventura, as he was telling me that he was a Navy SEAL and all of this bullcrap, Jesse the Body Ventura was a demolition guy. He was with the underwater demolition guys with the Navy before there were SEALs. So he wasn't a SEAL. But here's the thing about Governor Ventura. As he's giving me this big speech about explosives this and what it takes to burn that and da 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 da, he says to me, and let me tell you something else. The fire, the smoke that was coming from that fire at the World Trade Center was black. Anybody can tell you that when a fire is starved of oxygen, it turns black. I said to him, you know, I've never been a SEAL, and I wasn't even much of a Cub Scout, but I can tell you right now that a black flame, a black smoke from a fire, means it's consuming a lot of fuel. It's consuming a lot of fuel, so there's a lot of oxygen. What the hell are you talking about? No. This jackass, I'm telling you, and of course the quote for the Thomas Jefferson quote, you know that?
Yeah, well, you look that up on the internet, you found out that was fake.
That Thomas Jefferson quote, and I don't know which one it was, but it was making the rounds among all these meatheads in the 9/11 truth / Obama ain't an American citizen group. They're all the same idiot. These clowns were quoting Thomas Jefferson, something he never even said. You want to know why they were doing it? Because they were getting it out of Wikipedia or some other jazz like that.
They're just reading stuff on the internet. They think it's true.
Well, you join the club, man. I mean, that's what everybody does. There's a guy who's writing a book right now, and it's, one of my friends who is studying to be an archivist in college right now was telling me, she said, we got a problem with this generation of kids, and here's the problem. They are not accustomed to, they have not been taught to do research. They do not know anything about discriminatory thinking. They don't know anything about looking at facts, looking at information, and discriminating between what is the truth and what isn't. They are a Wikipedia generation. She said, we got a problem. You get enough of these idiots together, and they're all going to be just blabbing the same garbage, And anybody that really knows what the truth is going to be drowned out. And you got basically the, you know, the definition of just one big dumb mob of people.
That's, dude, these people are going to vote, too.
Well, let's hope they don't vote. Let's hope they ain't bright enough to find a... But that, you know, that's what's going on right now. And when one of their heroes is like Jesse Ventura or these jackballs that made that loose change or any of these stupid idiots that are part of the 9/11 truth movement, no, people, no. Wikipedia ain't where it's at, okay? Do you understand? We got kids that are writing papers. They're writing term papers. And what is their primary source? Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a noble effort. Please understand, I'm not trying to put down the people that got that. It's a very noble effort, but it is damaging people. It's destructive when it doesn't acknowledge the fact that it's just one of what should be many, many, many sources of information that people look toward. Don't go to Wikipedia as your sole source. And there's people doing term paper. I'm going to tell you, if you're a teacher, and the only source the kid's using is Wikipedia, are you kidding me or something? Don't tell me that you're actually passing that kid.
Yeah, well, but Wikipedia's got a lot of good information.
Oh, yeah, great. But Wikipedia's, half the time I look at Wikipedia, citation needed, citation needed, citation needed, article incomplete, this is a stub. No. All right, let's take a break here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. More news here in our News and Information Hour. Thank you, Bud and Robert, for keeping your mouth shut during that.
Yes, Mr. Henry.
Thank you, because a lot of times, you know. Daycare owner accused of drugging kids' milk. Here's one that we talked about before the show started, and we're going to get into this. A daycare owner drugged the kids' milk so, you know, they could go out and see a movie. What's wrong with that? We'll find out here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
You know, I'm looking at a red eye right now. I didn't see this. Toddlers and Tiaras is a real freak show. I mean, there's no question about it. You know that show, Bud?
Yeah, it's the one I get the parents with the kids are all dressed up like little sluts.
Basically, yeah. That's exactly right. Toddlers and Tiaras. I mean, it's a really disgusting show, and I honor and admire. I don't know who does it. Is it who the hell does that show, man? Is it National Geographic or something?
I don't know. I think it's Bravo Channel.
Well, whoever does that show should be, it's Lifetime. Lifetime should be given an award because, seriously, they show, whether it's once a week or how many times a week, they show a side to the human animal that really needs to be shown. I mean, this show is just as vile as it gets. Now I see on this replay a little kid on this Toddlers and Tiaras wearing some slut prostitute thing.
Yeah, but she's got on, like, boots and, like, I think it's like boots and a miniskirt.
Yeah, it's the little girl, a little baby. She's, I don't know how old she's, 4? In some tight skirt, boots, and walking around in a blonde wig. What the hell is wrong with people?
For me, they just think it's cute or something.
What's cute about that? Let me ask you something. What's cute about that? What the hell is wrong with the, you know, we are so sick. We don't even know we're sick. In some ways, I mean, the human race is, you know, we're struggling, we're doing okay, but in some areas, we're so sick, we don't even know it. We're so sick that we argue that we're not sick. We're so screwed up in the brain that we believe we're just expressing our constitutional rights, or some jazz like that, you know. And of course, nowadays we have a new animal on the prairie. This is the human being today that we deal with is this person that acts completely unacceptable, a person that is completely over the line in how they behave, and they argue with you about it. They tell you, "Well, that's my right. Your right to be a douchebag, huh? What do you mean a douchebag? I'm not being a douchebag. I would never do anything to harm my child." Well, you're doing it right now, man. Who are you to say? The only smart guy in the room, it seems.
But it's none of your business.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is my business.
How dare you?
No. How dare you? How dare you? You put that little kid in some slut uniform. You got her marching up and down on a bloody stage. I don't know, in 18 years, when that girl becomes an adult, she becomes everybody's problem, jackass. You understand that?
Well, if she gets arrested by the cops, well, what makes you think she's going to be a whore?
Well, I don't, but I ain't saying she's going to be a whore. I'm saying that it is a damaging thing to put a child like that into that kind of an outfit, because the kid's looking at it. She has no idea. She knows she's making the adults laugh, or they dig the way she looks, or she's making them happy. So you've started her on the merry road of let's look like a slut, and the kid is four. What is that?
That's a music.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's our...
That's the slut music.
Oh, yes, that's the slut music. That's, what do you mean, the slut music? Anyway, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry, Dan Northcraft, Fred Scotty, and Chris Johnson. We're produced by four guys, and Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard, too.
Yeah.
And don't forget, our website is philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Get yourself a backstage pass. Get on over there and take a look at our blog on what's ahead at our website. Until tonight, our local show for Los Angeles on KFI. We'll see y'all later. And thanks for listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.